Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Ray Penny with New Jersey School Board Association. This is Conversations on New Jersey Education, a program designed to bring leaders in the educational issues to you and everyone in the education community. This is part of our series for the reopening of schools. And this one is on handling the safety drills with social distancing protocol, something that I think has come up in a lot of meetings that I've had with board members across the state as we are looking to reopen our schools. If you have a question that you want to pass on to our guest speaker, who I'll introduce in a minute, all you have to do is dial 1-347-989-8904, 1-347-989-8904, and just press number 1, and that will let Robin know, who's monitoring a switchboard, that you have a question. Or we have a chat room feature. If you want to go to the chat room, you can just you have to log in with Blog Talk Radio, but there's no fee for that. And you can just type in your question, and I'll pass it on. With me is Kevin Craig with Porzio Compliance Services. He's the Assistant Vice President of Safety, Security, and Investigations. So welcome, Kevin. How are you?
Very good, Ray. Thanks for having me today. I appreciate it.
No problem. Okay. Well, before we get started on that topic, just tell us a little bit about Porzio.
Sure. I'm the Assistant Vice President of Safety, Security, Investigations for Porzio Compliance Services. Porzio Compliance Services is a wholly owned subsidiary of the law firm Porzio, Bromberg & Newman. We're a consulting company that specializes in all matters of physical and informational security, and we have an emphasis on school safety and security planning. We conduct physical security assessments, emergency planning, school safety drill planning and reviews, staff training investigations, and any general security consulting needs that schools may have.
Okay, thanks, Kevin. Well, before we start on the differences, my understanding is that the statutes that are still there on the mandating the number of drills that we have and the kind of drills that we have to happen in the school, they're all still there, right?
Yeah, the requirements for school security drills are codified by law. So while there's some other codes and regulations, related to COVID that have been either temporarily suspended due to the public health crisis, the drill laws are still in effect because they're statutory. So all those requirements are still there, but there are ways to navigate through to still meet those compliance measures to be compliant with those drill laws.
And just to give our listeners a view of what that means is, say we open in the first week of September, what are some of the drills that have to occur during the first couple months?
So there's some mandatory drills. So every school district has to do one security drill in every school every month and one fire drill in every school every month. Most importantly, in the first 15 days of school, the security drill will have to be done in the month of September within that first 15 days of school. So there are certain types of drills that are mandatory according to the drill laws in New Jersey. You have to do two active shooter drills, two lockdown drills, two bomb threat drills, and two non-fire evacuation drills. Those are the mandatory types, and they each have to be done twice each year. So assuming you have your 10-month school year, that would make up 8 of your mandatory drills. But there's other drills that you can do to supplement those during the first couple of months of school that wouldn't require necessarily moving students or getting students involved in the drill process.
Okay, and I think that's the one a lot of us find. So what is your recommendation as what can you do to kind of massage this?
So some of the other drills that are acceptable according to the drill law, that you can test your emergency notification systems, you can test your communication systems, do things like audibility assessments or tabletop exercise that don't necessarily involve students or moving students around. So it would be recommended that during the first couple of months of school to enable to accommodate those social distancing requirements that you do, select other drills that wouldn't require the moving around of students. So testing your communication system, testing your emergency notification systems, notifying your parents, things that are still practicing your emergency preparedness and still exercising your systems that you have in your school, but don't require the movement of students, so you wouldn't be compromising those social distancing requirements.
Okay, and just for our listeners, you mentioned a tabletop. What's a tabletop drill?
So tabletop exercises are basically running through hypothetical scenarios in a setting in a room setting. That's why it's basically referred to as a tabletop. You get a group of school administrators or security staff members around a table, run through a hypothetical scenario and how you would how the school would respond to that. So you're actually kind of walking through a hypothetical scenario without actually doing the job. So you're throwing out ideas on how you would navigate through a particular crisis or a particular incident, what resources you would have available to identify what things you're prepared for and where you might have some opportunities for improvement. You can do that for any type of scenario. You can do it for an active shooter scenario. You can do it for a bomb threat. You can do it for any type of crisis. You can run a hypothetical scenario and do a small scale tabletop exercise just to really run through your emergency preparedness procedures to identify challenges and opportunities for improvement.
Now, one of the things when you do your drills, you're kind of supposed to be a little consistent in covering a lot of the things. How do you remain consistent in doing all this when you probably have schedules that are, I'm seeing anyway, I'm not sure about your clients, but A-B schedules where it's not the same kids in every day or maybe not even the same staff. So how do you keep your consistency?
So it's important to maintain the same emergency protocols that you had in place prior to the COVID pandemic should still remain in place. We don't want to be adjusting our procedures to accommodate for a pandemic if we don't have to, because we want to stay true to what our emergency responses are like. So, for example, in a lockdown scenario, typically what that would look like in a New Jersey school is, you'd shut off the light. Teachers would shut off the lights and lock the doors and pull the shades, and then students would move into deep corners of the classroom to get out of the way of visibility from the windows and avoid detection. Obviously, with social distancing, we don't want to be pushing all students into corners where we wouldn't be able to socially distance. But if that's the best practice protocol, we don't want to change that to accommodate for social distancing, only to have to revert back to our original procedures afterwards. So we want to stay true to those emergency protocols to make sure that we're being as effective as possible in maintaining the integrity of our drills and our emergency responses. So ways to get around that are to, just not – we can have teachers walk through the scenarios and direct students of what they would do while the students remain seated in their desk. If we do get back to the point where we want to do lockdown drills or have to do lockdown drills to meet those minimum standards, we can have teachers just, approach it as kind of a lesson plan type of drill where they may go ahead and lock the doors and pull the shades and turn off the lights, but the students don't necessarily have to move at that moment. We can just do it in a way that it's taught and it's trained so they're getting the point of what the expectations are during the drills without actually physically having to get up and get in those corners and compromise that social distancing. As far as the different types of schedules, every student doesn't have to participate in every drill. So if your school is on an A and B schedule, the best way to make sure that all students are exposed to drills to some degree are to make sure you're planning your drill schedule so that each cohort has the opportunity to participate in whatever types of drill you're doing. So if you do a drill during in the month of September that only involves the A cohort, then you want to make sure that in October your drill is scheduled so it encompasses the time where cohort B will be in the building so they get the benefit of the drills as well. But each cohort does not have to participate in every drill every month. As long as we have these split schedules going on, you'll still be compliant with the drill laws.
And should you announce your drills in advance? I know in some practice they want to make sure that you do your drills and no one knows about it just to see how effective they are. So, but at least for the first couple of months, should that be something that they should consider?
Yeah, so announcing or not announcing drills varies from district to district. Some districts announce their drills all the time, and some prefer to do unannounced drills so they get a kind of a genuine response with some, you know, some level of urgency to their drills. But there's certainly nothing wrong with it, particularly during this time where you're going to be having to amend your drill schedule to some degree and maybe do something a little bit out of the ordinary. There's certainly nothing wrong with announcing your drills, letting your staff members and your students know that on a certain day we're going to be conducting this drill, and this is how we're going to do it. So you certainly have that option of announcing drills to make them more able to accommodate the changes in how the drill procedures are implemented.
All right. And I guess it's still important to do these drills, and maybe even more important because from what I'm seeing is the schools might be set up differently. So a teacher may have knew the routine for the last 3 or 4 years, but they might be in a different room with a different setup with plexiglass and other things. So it's still important to conduct these drills.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, the issues that we've had, the security concerns that we've had in schools for decades haven't gone away since COVID-19. Those threats and vulnerabilities still exist. So we have to find that balance between safety and security that we've traditionally upheld in schools, and being able to effectively mitigate and prevent the spread of disease. So it is important that we still continue to maintain the integrity of our safety and security strategies, and that includes practicing our emergency responses through drills.
And like everything in education, probably everything in a lot of our society, a lot of the social distancing protocols are kind of fly in the face of what we thought were good practices educationally, socially, and probably in business practice where we foster collaboration. But is that same thing true where they're in school security where some of the things that we took for granted as best practices are a little bit more difficult now because we just don't have we can't congregate the kids in one corner, say, like in the shelter in place?
Yeah, so there's a lot of the infectious disease mitigation measures that are being put in place really are contrary to good sound school safety and security best practices. Things like using multiple entrances. For years now we've been encouraging schools to limit the number of entrances so we can effectively manage access control and keep those minimal entrances supervised so we know who's coming and going and we can identify potential threats and vulnerabilities as they come in. With COVID, many schools to accommodate social distancing are using multiple entrances again. So it's important that we maintain the integrity of those entrances. So if you're going to use multiple entrances to accommodate social distancing, those entrances have to be supervised and monitored constantly by staff members. And those staff members should have communication with other people in the school, in the main office. So that way, if they do have an issue, if there is some security issue that could potentially impact the school at any one of those open entrances, they can quickly communicate to others in the school that a response is indicated. Things like students and staff members wearing masks is another issue. Typically things like any kind of face covering would be prohibited in school according to a dress code because we need to identify who's in our school buildings. So being able to readily identify staff members and students is going to be challenging. So, in most cases, at least staff members are required to wear visible identification badges so that way they can be readily identified, whether it's on a lanyard or somehow on their clothing. They can be readily identified as a staff member. Students, however, there's not a lot of schools that have that practice in place, but that may be something that schools want to consider because how else will we be able to identify that without facial recognition because of the mask issue, how are we going to really know that all of the students that are entering our building actually belong there and aren't coming there for a nefarious purpose? So having students wear identification badges or some other type of identifying way to identify them is something certainly to consider to mitigate that potential vulnerability of everybody having their faces covered. Things as simple as air circulation. Some of the recommendations are to open windows and doors to encourage air circulation and fresh air from outside. the one thing that I think is from a safety and security perspective is a non-negotiable is, you know, not propping doors, not propping, you know, all of the exterior doors in the building, unless they're supervised by a staff member, should be locked at all times. And I think that's one strategy that we need to really focus on is we can't just prop open doors for air circulation, because if we do and those doors aren't supervised, we're really allowing unfettered access to our school building. So just simple things like just maintaining the integrity of our security strategies while still doing the best we can to accommodate social distancing and you know, prevent, you know, the spread of infection, I think is important to really be true to our safety and security strategies.
I hadn't even thought about I think the propped open door was always one of the things that I saw when I went into schools as the one thing that people made a mistake on. But I didn't even think about the windows being open now because they're trying to get more circulation in these buildings. I don't think there'll be, in fact, one of the concerns we used to always have was the after-school activities. I guess in one way, there's probably going to be fewer after-school activities and fewer visitors coming into the school, I would think, anyway. So is that actually something that's a little bit easier to manage now?
Porzio has been working with a lot of schools with developing and reviewing their restart and recovery plans over the past few weeks. And what we've seen is many schools are limiting visitors to the degree where unless it's somebody who absolutely has to enter the building for some reason, whether it's for something like an IEP meeting or child study team meeting, things like that would require an in-person presence, they're really limiting the number of visitors that they're allowing into the school building. I mean, traditionally in schools you'd have visitors during the day with parents dropping things off. That the students may have forgotten, whether it was a lunch or gym clothes or homework. I think most schools are going to minimize that to the degree possible and not allow those unnecessary visits to the school. Certainly, we want to minimize the number of people from outside the school community that have to enter the building during the school day for sure.
And sometimes they're recommending having classes outside because we all the science seems to indicate when you're outside, the transmission of the disease is much less. Is that a concern from the security perspective, having kids and staff outside?
Well, it's certainly something that needs to be logistically vetted out to make sure that the areas that you're having those students congregate are safe. You don't want to have students in areas that have direct access to vehicular traffic or other potential issues outside the school building. But if you have a safe area outside the building that has quick access back inside the building, if there's any kind of safety issue where students would have to be returned to the building quickly. And as long as they're supervised and as long as the staff members that are with them have communication back into the building and have direct access back into the building, those things can be outdoor spaces can be utilized effectively. But again, it really has to have some level of logistical planning to make sure that all those things are in place, so the safety and security of the students and the staff members that go outside is maintained and is paramount. Most importantly, that they can get back in the building quickly and that they hear announcements that are made from inside the building and have direct communication back inside the building, so they know if there's an emergency response that's indicated. We have students outside all the time for phys ed classes and other science projects and things like that, so there's no reason why other classes can't utilize that same opportunity. It just needs to be well planned, and communication is key. Communication back to the building and the ability to hear any announcements that are coming from inside the building is important.
I would say, listening to you, and I know districts are putting a lot of work into how they're going to get the kids into school, how they're going to get them between classes if it's like a high school setting, how they're going to get them to eat if they're having a lunch period. And they're spending a lot of time trying to do that with all the social distancing protocols. The one thing they may not have had on the top of their mind in doing all this, though, is how do they do their safety drills, which are still important. How do they include that in their plans. And that's something that I guess you would recommend that they have to be thinking about too, not just keeping everyone 6 feet apart and wear a mask.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's still compliance with drill laws required, and all the safety and security planning measures, and the need to update and revise your procedures every year and make sure things are up to date. Those requirements are all still in effect. So they didn't go away with COVID, and they're not suspended. So we still need to conduct our drills in accordance with drill laws. We still need to review and revise our safety and security plans annually, as we always had. And it's an opportunity again to take a look at our procedures and make sure the things that we're doing are effective. And whether or not we're dealing with a pandemic or not, we still have to maintain the integrity of our safety and security. To maintain a safe environment for our staff and students.
And we kind of said this before, and as you're talking, it's trying to find that balance, I guess, where you still have your secured drills and your safety and security procedures in place, but now you just, I guess, you have a new framework in which to try to do it with these safety protocols. And with, as I said before, not every student is in every single day, so you have to make sure that you're touching all your cohorts in this. So I guess it's just trying to find that balance and really talking that balance out.
Yeah, it is. I mean, communication with stakeholders is another key to success. And I think the schools in New Jersey, school districts, school leaders in New Jersey have been doing, school boards in New Jersey have been doing a fantastic job communicating with their communities to determine how best to facilitate this reopening. And it's not easy. There's a lot of moving parts. When it comes to transportation or scheduling, staffing. Any of these logistical things, take a lot of planning. And I think, part of the requirements in the Road Back, document from the Department of Education is, developing these restart committees and pandemic response committees. And I think schools have done a great job, reaching out to their school community to see how best to facilitate these things. And it's going to take a collaboration and a partnership between schools, between emergency responders, local health officials, and parents and students as well, to really make the reopening as safe as it can be.
And you're talking about that communication. I guess it would be still probably maybe even more important to remind the parents that you still – and the students, obviously, that you still will be doing these drills in some fashion or another. And so it's important that the parents know that this is still going on, that it's still the regular procedures are kind of in place.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's always beneficial to let parents know, communicate with parents that what things you're doing to keep their kids safe. I'm a parent myself, and I know that I really take seriously the security measures that my children's schools implement, and I want to know that they're practicing and they're doing their due diligence to keep my kids safe. And I think from a parent's perspective, hearing that you're still doing the drills and you're still practicing emergency procedures, I think it would be welcome news to any parent of any school age child.
And I guess it's the same is true that they should be communicating this with they always do their plan, but they should be in communication with the law enforcement.
Yeah, law enforcement partners and emergency management partners are another key collaboration. When conducting these drills and how to facilitate them, and then law enforcement presence at these drills is important too. And we want our first responders to be able to respond to emergencies effectively. And the more they know the schools, the more they become familiar with the school facilities and the students and the staff members, the better the response will be for everyone.
So we're coming towards the close of this. Is there any piece of advice that you think you would like to pass on, or something that you say some people don't think about, they should keep in the, they should think about?
I just think, just to reiterate, that the threats to school safety that existed pre-COVID-19 are still there, and to some degree may have even been exacerbated by extended lockdowns. You know, if there are students who are considering violence in their schools, they may not have gotten resolved those issues being locked down for several months. So being able to communicate threats, being aware that those threats still exist, and maintaining the integrity of your safety and security strategies that you had pre-COVID is important. And finding that balance, I can't say enough about finding that balance between the need to prevent the spread of disease while also maintaining the safe and secure environment for your staff and your students.
Okay. And I just want to reiterate the one thing that we opened it with, or one of the opening, is all those drill requirements that we've had for years now are still in effect. That they're the one thing that they're one of the things that has not changed. So when we all go back to school, if I'm back in September, let's say, hope that happens, those are still in effect for all school districts in New Jersey.
They are still in effect. So while you're planning your reopening, you should also be planning on how you're going to facilitate and meet those drill requirements for the start of the school year.
Okay. That brings us to the end of this podcast. I'd like to thank Kevin Craig, who's the Assistant Vice President of Safety, Security, and Investigations with Porzio Compliance Services, which is a subsidiary of Porzio, Bromberg, and Newman Law Firm. Thanks, Kevin. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much, Ray.
Okay, and I hope you all found this informative. Have a good day, and I hope you're also thinking about the security drills when you put your plans together. Thank you, and have a good day.